Good morning from Washington. I'm Larry Quinn speaking to you from the Broadcast Center at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Welcome to today's news conference on the 2007 Farm Bill with Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns. In the studio with the Secretary today is Chief Economist Keith Collins. Reporters, if you wish to ask a question, please let us know by pressing star 1 on your telephone touchpad. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns.
Larry, thank you very much, and to everyone that we have out there on the line, thank you for your patience. I know we're starting a couple of minutes late here. There are always final touches that need to be made. Let me start out, if I might, this morning and say that the administration appreciates the work of the House Ag Committee. I appeared before the Ag Committee during their markup session and indicated that. I indicate that again. We recognize long hours were spent going through many, many amendments. But we believe that the bill put forth by the committee misses a major opportunity. The time really is right for reform in farm policy so strongly that the House bill fails to provide that. I'll talk in terms of the big picture for a few minutes, and then I'll go into detail about the missed opportunity for reform. If the contingency reserve concept is adopted without appropriate offsets, the House bill would exceed the administration's proposal overall by about $36 billion. That is not acceptable. Another important point, the Ways and Means Committee has now signaled an intention to raise taxes on certain businesses. Our understanding is that this tax increase would be used to pay for the House Farm Bill. Let me be clear about how I view this. I find it unacceptable to raise taxes to pay for a Farm Bill that contains virtually no reform. The administration did make difficult decisions. We did propose reform, and we did use those savings to increase funding for important priorities for our nation. The administration submitted a Farm Bill proposal that provides real reform and funds priorities within a balanced budget plan. It did not raise taxes, and it provided a strong safety net for farmers. Also, the House bill does not generate true savings when it comes to spending. The bill claims $4.7 billion in savings by changing the timing of payments so that they wouldn't count when the budget office estimated the cost of the bill. These shifts in timing, well, they don't save a dime in tax dollars. They're really nothing more than a budgetary transfer. One could even call them a gimmick. And the House bill actually takes a step backward, creating farm policy that is less responsive to the free market, and it paints an even larger bullseye on the backs of American farmers when it comes to international trade. The statement of administration policy outlines these concerns and others. The official statement of policy makes it clear that myself and the president's entire team of senior advisors will recommend that he veto this bill if it is adopted in its current form. We are unanimous on this point. Now, I'll take a few minutes to highlight five areas of great concern in the reform arena. The first is payment limits, specifically the House version of the adjusted gross income cap. While we do appreciate the House adopting the AGI approach to payment limits, the House bill does not go far enough to set real limits. Current law contains an AGI cap of $2.5 million. Fewer than one-tenth of 1% of American tax filers fall within this AGI. So this provision of current law really has virtually no impact. The House bill decreases the AGI cap, but only to $1 million annually. It also affects those with AGI between $500,000 and $1 million, but only if less than 67% of their income is derived from farming. The House bill also eliminates the limit on loan deficiency payments and marketing loan gains entirely. We estimate, based on IRS data, that approximately 3,000 farm operators and landlords would be potentially affected by the $1 million AGI cap. 3,000. Another estimated 4,000 have AGI between $500,000 and $1 million. So just over 7,000 people would be impacted across the entire United States. So our economists have taken a look at it, and they believe that the maximum number of people likely to be affected by the House approach is about 7,000. Now compare that to the administration proposal to set an AGI cap of $200,000, which we would average over 3 years. We estimate, based on IRS data, that 38,000 farmers could be affected by our proposal. That's more than five times the number of operators who are doing very well by any definition, who would no longer receive government subsidies under our proposal as compared to the House bill. The potential savings tell an almost identical story. The House AGI approach saves $473 million over the 10-year SCORE period. The administration AGI approach saves three times that amount, $1.5 billion. Here's the bottom line. The administration's proposal would affect only those who are among the wealthiest 2% of Americans. Now, we celebrate their success, but we also believe strongly that there is a point at which people graduate from receiving government cash subsidies. We don't take these savings away from the Farm Bill. Instead, we propose directing these dollars to beginning farmers, rural communities, and other very important Farm Bill priorities. It's the right thing to do. The second area of real concern focuses on an unintended consequence of the O2 Farm Bill. This led to $3 billion in unplanned, unneeded payments for the 2005 crop year. I call it the pick-your-price phenomena, and the reality of this phenomena is that it actually happens annually to some degree. In Farm Bill lingo, it's referred to as beneficial interest. It involves very complex farm programs, but let me explain it as simply as I can. Under current law, if you get a loan deficiency payment, you're allowed to lock it in any time after harvest, even if prices are temporarily low. Yet, because they still own the crop and therefore retain beneficial interest, you can sell the crop later when the prices have rebounded. Probably the most significant example, although I have pointed out already that this occurs to some degree in every year, but probably the most significant example happened in 2005 with Hurricane Katrina. Shipping on the Mississippi River backed up, causing a temporary drop in corn and soybean prices from about $2 a bushel for corn to about $1.50, $1.60 in that vicinity. Many farmers locked in their loan repayment rate at $1.50 or $1.60 and collected 40 to 50 cents per bushel. Of course, the taxpayer pays for that. But, of course, the crop was still owned, and so when the price recovered, and it did, as everybody anticipated it would, the crop was sold. So a payment was received from the government to make up for low market prices, and yet the crop was sold at the higher price at a later date. Under the 2002 Farm Bill, this was absolutely legal. Yet it did cost taxpayers $3 billion for the 2005 crop year, when in fact no loss was suffered. The administration's proposal requires producers to lock in loan deficiency payment rates when they sell their crops. So producers receive the price support provided by the loan rate, but it changes that pick-your-price phenomena that has occurred as a result of the O2 bill. The House bill, again, fails to address this phenomena. Third area of concern relates to the increased loan rates and target prices in the House bill. It raises loan rates on 14 of 25 eligible crops and raises target prices for 12 of 17 eligible crops. I just strongly suggest that these provisions clearly represent a step backward in farm policy. Farmers across this country, for as long as I have known farmers, which is all of my life, have told me they want to farm for the market. Planting decisions should be based on a free market demand. But loan rates that exceed market prices create an incentive to plant one crop over another, regardless of market demand. Additionally, the marketing loan program is categorized as the most trade-distorting amber box program under our World Trade Organization obligations, making it subject to intense scrutiny. That's that bullseye that I talk about being on the farmer's back. No one can convince me that there's wisdom in painting an even larger bullseye. We should be protecting our programs from challenge and thereby protecting our farmers, not the opposite. The administration proposed setting loan rates at 85% of market price averaged over the previous 5 years, excluding the high and low years. Loan rate caps would be set at the level agreed upon by the House-approved version of the 2002 Farm Bill. Clearly, this is more market-oriented, and it prevents government subsidies from influencing market decisions, and it better protects our safety net from challenge. It better protects our farmers. And this has an impact, a positive budget impact, of about $3 billion. Fourth on my list of serious concerns are the budget issues, the gimmicks, if you will. There are five gimmicks that change the timing of payments. They don't actually change the amount of the payments or the obligation. In other words, the same amount of tax dollars will be spent, but because of the way they are timed, they're not counted under the 10-year score. The House bill claims $4.7 billion in non-existent savings. This is not acceptable. The administration proposed real reforms which produce real savings, which then finance real priorities within a balanced budget plan. The real reforms that I've outlined for you today, proposed by the administration, add up to real savings of more than $4 billion. While the House bill contains more than $4 billion in these gimmicks that produce no real savings. I think we can ask the question, is that real reform? And I think the obvious answer is it is not. The last point I want to make is that there are many other important provisions contained in the administration's Farm Bill proposal that we believe need to be considered. We believe our 11 conservation programs should be consolidated into three to reduce administration costs and make the programs easier to farmers for farmers to understand and utilize. This is what farmers told us they wanted when we did our Farm Bill forums. We believe farm policy should reach out to beginning farmers with more predictable, direct support to provide a stabilizing force amid the uncertainties of production agriculture. We believe that support of rural communities is essential. About 90% of total farm household income now comes from non-farm sources. So our farmers and our ranchers, well, they depend on our rural communities. We propose funding to renovate many rural critical access hospitals so they can provide that much-needed care and emergency care. We also want to reduce a backlog of projects in our rural communities that would provide safe drinking water, fire trucks, telemedicine, among other things. We're disappointed that the House bill provides virtually no increase in mandatory funding for renewable energy. The administration proposed $1.6 billion in increased funding targeted at cellulosic ethanol, part of the future for our farmers. Our proposal helps to meet the renewable energy goals of Congress and this president. These provisions support the future of American agriculture instead of relying on farm policy of the past. Let me offer a couple closing comments, then I'll be happy to take questions. The administration took the best of the O2 Farm Bill. We did keep the structure. I would strongly argue we made it better because we heard from farmers all over America as to how to make it better. We listened to the grassroots wisdom that was conveyed to us beneath state fair tents and in community centers across this nation. We just can't be satisfied with farm policy that fails to embrace the future. We will deliver this message to the very best of our ability to the House of Representatives, and then to the United States Senate, and then to those who are chosen to conference on the bill. I can tell you this, and I know it for a certainty. President Bush wants to sign a farm bill this year, a bill that he can wholeheartedly support and believe in. We will do everything we can to make certain that that bill ultimately arrives on his desk and that that bill is worthy of his support and a presidential signature. I'd be happy to respond to questions.